You're listening to a Left Lion podcast.
I think you're terrible people over there at Right Lion or whatever you call it. It's a total shit heap. I think it's pathetic. You're part of the fake news media. You tell terrible lies about Derby, which I think it's my favorite part of Wales. It's a beautiful place, but you guys run it. You run it so bad. And you're running it into the floor. Your readership's going down the tubes. You're total losers. And I think it's so sad. There are some great people there, but they're not working at your newspaper that's full of lies. It's a total shit mess what you're doing there. I think it's so pathetic.
Welcome to episode 10 of the Left Lion Interviews podcast. My name is Jared Wilson and I am the editor-in-chief and co-founder of Left Lion. I'm delighted to introduce today's guest, Matt Ford. Originally from Lenton, Matt is a comedian, TV and radio presenter, a writer, an impressionist and more. He's perhaps best known for his podcast The Political Party, where he interviews politicians, including in the past the likes of Keir Starmer, Tony Blair, Ken Clark, Nicola Sturgeon, William Hague, George Osborne and Angela Rayner. Matt is also a regular on radio stations like Radio 4, 6 Music and Absolute Radio. He's usually either talking about politics or football. He's also done lots of TV, including fronting Unspun, a political comedy series that ran on the channel Dave from 2016 to 2018. And he was also a prominent member of the cast in the 2020 reboot of Spitting Image, which might help to explain the sample you heard at the start of this show. In early 2025, Matt became the winner of Celebrity Mastermind, answering questions on his specialist subject of Nottingham Forest Football Club between 1977 and 1993. A couple of years ago, Matt was diagnosed with bone cancer and had a tumour removed from his spine. He now lives with a colostomy bag, and as you'll find out in this podcast, he's not shy of discussing that. And he also has a show up coming up at the Nottingham Playhouse in June where you can hear all about it in person.
Hi, this is Sophie from Left Lion, Nottingham's iconic culture magazine. Each month we publish a beautiful free magazine that shines a light on the art, music, food, literature and more that makes Nottingham such a vibrant and creative city to live in. It's a bit unusual for a local print magazine to exist these days, but we've managed to keep going for over 20 years, giving the city's artists, photographers and writers a platform to publish their work. We distribute 15,000 copies in over 300 venues across the county, and you can find Left Lion in every local library, every Castle Rock pub, in all active Nottingham leisure centres, and all the best bars, cafes and hangouts in Nottingham. If you're ever in town at the start of the month, you may have seen our Left Lion bike rolling around the streets. In line with our pledge to be a carbon neutral company, we deliver our magazines on foot, by electric bicycle, or where strictly necessary, by van. You can also read the full magazine and lots more for free at leftlion.co.uk. Check out the events listings on our website to find out what's going on in Notts, and if you'd like to promote your business or organisation with us, please visit leftlion.co.uk/advertise.
So let's get the PR stuff out of the way, I guess. Tell us about the new show.
So it's called The End of an Era Tour. I started it at the Edinburgh Festival last year, and it is a stand-up show full of impressions of people like Donald Trump and Keir Starmer, and also dealing with the fact that a year and a half ago I got cancer and had spinal surgery to remove it, and there are changes to my body, which I mine for gags. So it's a mixture of those two things, really.
So you've obviously mentioned, I was going to ask about the health stuff you've been through. Can we talk about that then?
Of course, yeah.
What happened?
So I was performing at Edinburgh the year before, had really bad nerve pain in my left leg, and nerve pain where I couldn't move a millimetre without it. You know, I was paralysed by the pain. So I realised something was wrong. Presumed it would just be a slip disc or something, got an MRI scan. And was diagnosed with cancer. There was a tumour on the base of my spine, a chordoma, very rare form of cancer that only one in a million people get. And obviously at that point you think, well, if you're going to carve that out,
there's going to be a price to be paid for that. So I had the base of my spine removed in October 2023. I was in hospital for 10 weeks recovering from that. And as a result of that, I've now got a stoma and I have to catheterize myself. And there's impacts on all sorts of things. But I'm just so glad to be alive, to be cancer-free. And I can't believe I can still walk. You know, to have the base of your spine removed and still be able to walk, I think, is miraculous. So it was tough for a bit, but now I just feel really good about it. I'm just so pleased that I caught it early, that I feel like I've paid a relatively small price for having had it, and that I can get back out and work, because when stuff like that happens, you're not sure what your future is going to be like or how long you're going to have left. You really worry about, you know, is my life going to dramatically change? Is my life going to be rubbish? So thankfully, it's not.
God bless you. I mean, because you're, you know, obviously you're a younger man than me, aren't you? What are you, in your early 40s?
I'm 42. I was 40 when, yeah, I was diagnosed.
Oh, bless you. Well, yeah, more power to you, man. So how do you mind that in the comedy show without giving too much away?
Well, I think, you know, now that I poo in a different way, there's you know, scatological angles that not every other comedian would have, you know. I'm adapted, so I do jokes about that, and I'm into catheterize myself and the impact on sexual function and stuff like that. You know, it's just a new way to do knob gags, really, but with perhaps an element of pathos to it. But I think I'm an optimistic person, so I think it's really good fun to get comedy out of something that is potentially quite bleak. You know, I'm really keen to avoid it being sad, because I think it's really funny. And I think that's, yeah, it's kind of body-based comedy about, you know, how parts of me have changed alongside the other stuff that I usually do.
Oh, bless you. So, right, first off, let's talk about the Labour government. I know you've had a love-hate relationship with the Labour Party over the years, mainly love, right? So we're not, like, what are we now? 9, 10 months, nearly a year into the Keir Starmer era. How do you think he's doing? What are the best and worst things he's done so far?
I think they've done really well. And I think, obviously, they get a landslide, but on 34, 35% of the vote. So it's not as if everyone was on board with it and all of a sudden people are kind of offside. They're about as popular as they were when they won the election. And they've inherited a very, very difficult set of circumstances. I think in those circumstances, there's only so much you can do. And I think they've taken the right decisions. I think they were right to close the VAT loophole that private schools enjoyed. I think they were right to take the winter fuel payment off wealthier pensioners. I think they were right to give public sector staff the pay rise that they did, to prioritise public services, to bring waiting lists down. I think the way that he has handled, frankly, a terrifying global situation by being a real grown-up, trying to maneuver Trump, who is a chaotic, vengeful actor in a way, but show solidarity with Ukraine, increase defense spending, because the reality is we can't rely on America anymore. I think he's handled that. That's such a difficult situation. And I think Keir Starmer is a problem solver. He's a ruthless problem solver. And he will take the decisions that will be in the best long-term interest of the country. It's just that he's inherited a mess. So you can't really get out of the mess we're in without a level of pain. So then I think he's got the unenviable task of trying to be as fair as possible in a very unfair set of circumstances. So I think they've done really well. I think the temptation is to always compare it to the last Labour government and go, well, last time Labour were in, everything was great. You're like, yeah, because they didn't inherit the scale of the problem that this government's had to inherit. So I think overall they've done really well. I think that the thing that they clearly have to improve at, that I think a lot of people, this would be their common issue with it, is you kind of have to tell stories, is that as an electorate, we need to know that we're going to go through this pain to get somewhere. And if you think of the way that Cameron and Osborne sold austerity to people, they were like, we're going to go through this difficult thing, but we will get there. You know, there's this sort of brighter tomorrow that's coming. I think there just has to be a bit more of that, is we've got to suck it up for now. It's going to be difficult, but tell us why certain groups are going to have to pay more or get less. Explain that to us and what your philosophy is. And I think people then accept it a bit more if they think, you know what, I can take 4 or 5 years of difficulty on the chin. And I think when they do that, when you get those big events like the budget or the spring statement, where there's more of a, when they take you through the steps of it, I think people feel slightly more reassured by it. But I don't envy them. You know, they're going to end up, you know, groups that they would always want to be on the side of aren't going to get everything that they deserve in the coming years. And that's going to be very difficult.
Hmm. And what do you think to him as a human being? I mean, I presume you've met him. He's probably been on your podcast, right?
Yeah, he's a problem solver. And that's what I really like about him is he's entirely pragmatic and he's ruthless in the pursuit of solving those problems. And I think they're the sorts of people you want in charge of things. You don't want people who are constantly sort of self-promoting. Now, he's a politician, so he's got to do an element of that. Otherwise, people aren't going to vote for him. He's a football mad lager drinker. You know, there's a lot to like about him. You know, he's a normal bloke. He just happens to be very bright. He's good fun. He's great company. Absolutely football mad. Always messages me when Forest win, which obviously is a lot because we're doing great. So yes, I like him. And I think I like the fact that he's different to the sorts of Boris Johnson type politicians where it's all about them at the expense of the national interest. This is someone who really takes public service seriously. And I think you can, that comes with risks because then the pressure can appear to be a burden. I think people want to know that the person in charge takes it seriously. They also want to think, I like this person and I enjoy hearing from them. So I think that's the element. I think perhaps he's slightly a reluctant leader when it comes to the more presentational side. But I think overall people find him quite a reassuring figure. I don't think they worry about him being in charge in the same way that we did when it was Boris Johnson or Liz Truss. I think reassurance is an underrated commodity in politics, and I think he's really got that.
I mean, I share some of those thoughts. I feel like too. I mean, do you think he's, the media are being fair to him? I mean, one example that struck me that I just thought was deeply unfair was, do you remember really early on into his leadership? And he started going to sit at Arsenal in a box, right, with his son. And there was this whole thing with the BBC and others going, why, well, you know, why is he doing that? Perks and all that. And then he just explained that, well, we paid for season tickets, but if I was going to continue doing this and be this thing that I really want to do in my normal life, then we'd have to hire all the seats around us for security guards.
That's right.
And, you know, that kind of thing. I just think, you know, the way he explains it to me is, you know, because I was just like, yeah, that makes total sense. Give this man a box. And they gave him a box, didn't they, as well?
Yeah, and it's not a box that you can buy. So it's not like there's a payment being, that's just the club helping out a fan who, for security reasons, and you couldn't have had him evicting two rows of people around him. You know, all those people would have been in the papers going, I've had a season ticket for 30 years and I got evicted by the Prime Minister. It would have been a nightmare. And you think, on the one hand, we say we want politicians to be normal people. You know, but we haven't created a public realm where it's safe for them to do that all the time. So that's on the public. So if he's going to go to football, which apparently we love as a country, we want him to go, we want him to be in touch with it, he wants to take his kid in a safe way, and the club say, come as a kid. I mean, tons of politicians have done that over the years. I think with Labour, the standard is always a bit higher, is that there's a sense that because of their politics, they shouldn't ever get anything for free. I totally understand why there's a perception problem with that I think they do have to be alert about. But equally, I think, as you say, when you explain it, I want politicians to be able to do stuff. I want them to be able to go and see shows, see football matches. I don't begrudge them a bit of security for their own protection. And we've seen how, frankly, our sort of lax security attitude towards our politicians has been catastrophic in recent years with people getting murdered. You're like, you can't put cabinet ministers in the mosh pit at an Oasis gig or out in the stands for a football match. It's just not safe for them. So, yeah, I think a lot of that stuff's bullshit. I just think most people go, even if they don't agree with him, they go, well, he can't just sit in the stands. People know that it's nonsense. Yeah. But obviously, it's a free hit of a story, isn't it? You just have to have a good answer.
So let's talk about you. What I want to talk about is your little Matt when you were a young lad. So you grew up in West Bridgeford, right?
Snenton.
Snenton?
Yeah, Snenton.
Ah, okay. And did you go to Beckett School?
I went to Beckett, yeah. So I'd get a bus across
town.
So
what were you like as a youngster? Got any fun memories?
Oh, yeah, loads of fun memories. You know, obviously, like, childhood's incredible, isn't it? You're discovering the world. I mean, Goose Fair, Christmas. I still love Christmas. Childhood, you got no worries, have you, really? You don't know about bills and tax and responsibilities, and you're just getting into forest. You know, I could hear the forest ground from our home. So that, I just remember thinking, oh, my God, this is great. And then trying to think, like, I mean, I remember Goose Fair every year. I just thought, man, we're so lucky to live in Nottingham, because Goose Fair was almost like the start of the party season, because you'd get Goose Fair, then it'd be Halloween, then Bonfire Night, then Christmas. You're like, this is like a festival. So, yeah, just childhood, really, so sad. It's like, we were playing on Colwick Woods, going to Greens Mill in Snenton. Snenton Market, buying loads of out-of-date sweets for 10p. That discount store in St. Anne's. And going to Forest. Basically football and sweets.
Well, what more do you want out of life? I'm calling you from Snenton Market now. So it's all a bit different around here now, though. It's not 10p sweets anymore. It's cake shops and bakeries and, you know, that kind of thing, really.
That's great.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's great. It looks fantastic. And the Art of Football guys are down there.
They're not anymore, you know.
Aren't they?
Yeah, they got too big. They got too big. So their units near us are now in Netherfield, basically.
Okay.
But they're doing great stuff, aren't they? I mean, I love their designs.
They're brilliant. Excellent. They're so talented. And their nationwide success is fully deserved. But, oh, yeah, Victoria Baths. I used to go swimming there. And it's terrifying. Wasn't a fun swimming pool, was it?
Yeah, they're better now. I mean, I never went. I'm a Sherwood lad, so I went to Bestwood Baths, which were pretty bad. But I've been to the Snenton Baths in the last year or so, and they're actually quite nice now.
Okay.
Great council facility. Anyway, they've got a sauna and steam room.
Oh, wow, okay, so it's been updated. I mean, as a kid, it was just a big pool, and you're like, whereas you go to Rushcliffe and they have flumes and stuff.
Yeah.
Victoria Baths felt very serious. Scary place. It just was constantly terrified of drowning. And we go to Carlton Forum sometimes. That was nice. And then when you discover Rushcliffe, going on flumes. And then Bramcote Baths with the space bowl. So then we moved to Bramcote when I was at the sort of Bramcote Stabo border when I was at secondary school. And that space bowl flume, I mean, it was you could carve your back to shreds going over like the ridges on the way down and then just dropping through the plug hole. It can't have been safe.
They had a really high diving board as well. I mean, I was never a particular fan of jumping off the diving board, I don't think.
No way.
And I remember that having a Bramcote, having a really big one.
Yeah, it was class. Ooh. Yeah, so that was good. Swimming mainly, vending machines and the smell of chlorine was that was basically it.
Hmm. So I read on Wikipedia that your mum was once a nun. Is that true?
That's correct. Really? Yeah. She was a nun for about 15 years before she had me. So she went into the convent quite young, and two of her sisters did. One of her brothers was in a seminary in Belgium. So, yeah, their family, my mum's family, grew up in Bilbra. My granddad worked at the Raleigh factory. And, they had 8 kids, Catholic family, and four of them went into the cloth.
Ooh. So was religion quite a big part of your childhood, or...?
Yeah, it was, yeah. And we'd go to church. I was an altar boy, and spewed on the altar once because I hadn't had my breakfast. I just remember thinking, this is so early. I don't know why I didn't eat, but I knew I was in trouble straight away. So I feel woozy. Sort of stood there holding the big candle. And I think I was too nervous to stop at Mass and go, I'm going to be sick. And I just vomed all that myself. God, it was embarrassing. So I've always, from that day forth, valued breakfast as a, you know, the most important meal of the day. If you don't have breakfast, you're going to spew on your sen. So I learned that early.
So the political parties, it's probably, you know, the podcast, it's probably what you're best known for, at least what you've been doing for a long time. So are you 12 years in and 400 episodes? That was in my notes.
Yeah. Yeah. Started it in 2013. And obviously politics was completely different back then. That's pre-Brexit, pre-Scottish independence referendum. You know, it was like before Trump and everything. It was, you know, it's a real catalogue. So many of the people I've had on are no longer with us. You know, it's such an amazing vault of these profiles with people who've really shaped our lives. I just love doing it as a hobby, really. You know, the fact that it makes me a living is a bonus. I'm just fascinated by these people. I love interviewing them. I love teasing them. And I'm genuinely interested in them. Probably more interested in the ones that I disagree with. So I just love making it. I can't believe it's been 12 years. It's flown by.
So for the benefit of our readers and listeners, can you tell us some of the people you've had on?
Oh, God. So Tony Blair, William Hague, Neil Kinnock, Keir Starmer, Nigel Farage, Tessa Jowell, Charles Kennedy, Michael Heseltine, Nicola Sturgeon, Sadiq Khan, Alistair Campbell, Anthony Scaramucci, Julia Gillard, Angela Rayner. Basically everyone, isn't it? Basically everyone, yeah. And there's still a few people that, you know, anyone who's been prime minister, I think, is that's that extra level of curiosity because they've run the country. So, and, you know, their stories from behind the scenes are, the stakes are just so much higher. So I would love to have Cameron or Theresa May, even Truss or Johnson on, because they've obviously done it at the highest level. So regardless of the outcomes, it is interesting talking to people who've held that office.
Can you pick us maybe top three moments or guests from those times?
Tessa Jowell was really special because I think before you interview anyone, you kind of have a sense of who they are and you think, well, I'm going to ask them about this and then I'll follow my nose for other bits. You know, I'll just see where the conversation leads us. And with some of them, you think, well, that'll be a more funny interview. So then I think I'll have to make sure there's serious bits. And then other bits, I think, well, they might be a bit more serious. So I'll have to maybe chip in more often with a few gags just to keep the atmosphere light. With Tessa Jowell, I was a fan of hers and I was very aware of her and what she'd achieved in her career. I had no idea about the nature of her personality or what she was like. And it's the closest thing. I don't believe in God anymore. You know, I'm open-minded. Obviously, I don't know. But that is the closest thing to a spiritual experience I've ever had in my life was interviewing Tessa Jowell. I've never met anyone like that. What politics meant to her and the way she saw public service and just, I've never met anyone like that. So that was very special. Tony Blair was incredible because we couldn't announce it for security reasons. So people turned up having no idea who the guest was going to be. And then out walks Tony Blair. And that was, people lost their shit.
That was one of the live ones.
Yeah, it was incredible. And he's really funny. And so that was just very entertaining. And he's obviously so talented. You can disagree with decisions that he took, but his ability is unreal. He's very unusual in terms of his level of skill. So that was great. Anthony Scaramucci. I mean, Angela Rayner is out of this world funny and so charismatic, so unpredictable, so refreshing that every time she's on, it goes viral multiple times because people listen back to it and there was some other thing she said that was outrageous, got missed. So Hague was phenomenal, really funny, really sharp. Neil Kinnock, the way he talks, the way his voice sounds, his vocabulary, the emotional heft that he's got. So there's obviously this, as you say, hundreds of episodes. It's so hard to pick out. The more I think about it, the more people pop into my mind.
So you also created the Unspun TV show for Dave. That ran over 4 series. Any plans to resurrect it?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think... I think that probably is over, but I think there's always... I'm always pitching TV shows of that sort of ilk. I think there's absolutely a market in this country for the sort of late-night shows that they have in America. I don't think there's any reason why you couldn't have 2 or 3 high-quality late night satirical shows with guests. I think those sorts of shows are really good and really needed and always relevant. So I'm always pitching those things. So I think eventually I will probably make a show like that again, but it would be slightly different in its format. I just think commissioners for a while were slightly wary of upsetting government or whoever. Whereas now I hope that the landscape is changing a bit and people feel that actually these are needed. These are needed shows. You need a kind of entertaining way of holding powerful people to account.
We know it's hard having to wait a whole month in between Left Line magazines. Heck, it's difficult enough getting through the week. Worry not, listener, we've answered the call. You can get a pithy, up-to-date digest of the best stuff going on in Nottingham each week direct to your inbox every Wednesday by signing up to the Left Line Weekly newsletter. Left Line Weekly contains our top recommendations of events, new content, exclusive competitions, and more besides. So what are you waiting for? Visit leftline.co.uk/newsletter to sign up now.
Okay, let's talk about Spitting Image. You were part of the, I mean, obviously legendary satire show of kind of, you know, my childhood. How much do you remember? You're 5 years younger than me, right? How much do you remember it as a kid?
I was aware of it being around, but I didn't watch it when I was young. It was late night illicit telly and I was at primary school. So it was only, I was aware of it. And then I had a Spitting Image video after Euro 96, they did. So I was aware of it. I knew it was funny. I knew it was outrageous. But it was really the generation before me. So obviously it is the British satirical show. It has a very special place in people's hearts. So yeah, getting to work on it, bringing it back was incredible.
So you voiced, is this right, Donald Trump, Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer, right?
Yes. I think I did some other ones as well. I can't remember which other ones now. And then we did it in the West End as a musical a couple of years ago.
Did you?
Yeah, me and Al Murray and Sean Foley wrote it. And then people could come and see the puppets live. And that was, the reaction to that was unreal. And also, you know, if you're making a telly show like that, you never hear the audience reaction. It's not filmed in front of an audience. So to put Spitting Image on stage and hear the whoops and cheers and laughs that different characters got was... I was just so pleased that people got to see the puppets in the room because they're so lifelike. They capture the essence of someone and yet they're these grotesque recreations of people. They're really insulting ways of doing people a lot of the time. But they take on the life of that person in a way. People were deferential to the puppet of the Queen. They hated Boris. Do you know what I mean? Like it was a Punch and Judy show live on stage. And it was, we were really ambitious with what we did with sets and screens and the soundtrack. So doing it live, that was, we you know, that had never been done before. So it was cool to be part of that.
Where will the series come back? I mean, I know BritBox isn't really a thing now. It got bought by ITV, is that right?
Yeah, I think it was made by ITV and the BBC, but we were the only original show on there. So I think they were trying to drive people towards it. People are used to getting, so the rest of it was just old shows, whereas... I'm not sure if it, I've got no idea if it still exists, but I think after we were on there, I think they did then try and make more original shows because you think, well, you could go to the iPlayer or ITVX or whatever to watch the old stuff. I never felt that it was a strong enough idea to just have one original show on there. I think you needed multiple things. And the fact we would get one episode a series on ITV and it would go off the charts in terms of its viewing figures. And you think, well, just put it on ITV. But there you go, that was their call.
Yeah, there was quite an all-star cast working on that with you actually. In fact, who was that, the showrunner of Spitting Image, who the reboot?
Yeah, it was Jeff Westbrook from The Simpsons,
right,
who was an incredible person to work with. I mean, his instincts were great and he really saw, I mean, he's still the showrunner of The Simpsons. You know, he's got such a cartoony sense of humour. Whereas I think the British writers were kind of seeing Spitting Image as they'd remembered it, which is, you know, this has to be brutal. We've got to go for these people. And that element was still there. But I think he also nudged us in a direction that was really interesting of seeing it in a cartoony way and thinking of visual gags and things like that. And that was he was a phenomenal person to work with, you know, given his pedigree and his caliber. So that was that was obviously like an extra layer of something special.
And then you've got these other people in the cast, like Indira Varma's Priti Patel on there, wasn't she?
She was great.
And Gus Collins, was she seen her? And the guy who played Bugs Bunny from Space Jam, right, as Joe Biden, is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so there were amazing American voice people on it. It was mad. It was mad. But obviously, we were making it during COVID. So I was just recording it on my laptop on a mic. So it's not like we were all together. We would have writer's rooms on Zoom where you've got 7 or 8 people all on a Zoom chat. It's not the easiest way to make anything. So we were operating in quite restrictive circumstances. But then the second series, we were all back in the room together, and that was a lot more fun because it's just easier to riff on each other's ideas when you're in the room with each other. You know, if you're on Zoom and people's microphones are cutting out or their notifications are on, yeah, that made it a bit harder.
Yeah. So outside of politics, you're a massive footy fan. I want to chat to you about your fellow Knots lad, firstly, Matt Dyson, because I knew him at school. I went to school with him and his brothers.
No way.
Yeah, for real. And I still chat to him occasionally. What's he like to work with?
He is a dream. And he is obviously in an industry where people need a level of self-confidence and self-belief. And often then some people become very pushy or unpleasant, or just, you know, their ego becomes out of control. There is never any risk of that with him. And he is so easy to work with at the same time as being one of the most talented people I've ever worked with. His instincts, he's a phenomenal person to bounce off. He's so funny. He's happy to be the fool. He's happy to deliberately misunderstand things. He really understands how radio works. And there are so few people like that. There are so few people prepared to have that sort of persona. And he's just so warm. He's such a decent, funny man. He's an absolute joy. And the fact that we're both from Nottingham, we're both Forest fans, is a mad coincidence.
Mm. Well, please pass on my regards to him.
I will do.
Both old Hayward School alumni. So in other Knots people you work with, there's a pattern here, you see. You've got this Wondery podcast, British Scandal, with Alice Levine.
Yeah,
she's a beast,
man.
In that, isn't she?
I mean, she is exceptionally talented and has so many different skills that she can ad-lib at speed, but with such a calm delivery. She's got such a great brain for comedy and for just knowing how to make something funny and make it. She's got such a good, like, comic brain and voice. And again, you know, it's just such a nice person. So you're working with someone who's very talented and is easy to work with. And that's often a lot of it, is you want to work with good people, but you also want to work with people that are pleasant and that you don't dread working with. So I got very lucky, really, working with her and working with Matt, that I saw that we're all from Nottingham and we've ended up by pure chance working. It's not that I'd come across Matt before, but it's not like we were existing friends. And the same with Alice. We'd never met, I don't think, before we started doing that podcast together. So it is by pure chance that I've ended up making shows with two of the people from Nottingham.
Oh, well, it's wonderful to see. Right, let's talk about Forest. I presume you're quite happy with how they're doing season, right?
It's just the best. It's the best it's been for 30 years. And it's not even just about this season. I don't want it to end. It's just like, it just keeps getting better and better. You think, well, what we could potentially achieve in the next 5-10 years, what's our future going to be like? You want to win stuff. We're in the FA Cup semi-final. You think these are the... We were forced to live in the past for so long because of how bad things had got. You know, I was always buying retro shirts and watching old clips on YouTube, and the present was terrible. And then all of a sudden, there's this explosion of stars, of amazing players, not just one or two, a starting 11 of players that you absolutely adore. And you think, we're going to be talking about these guys in 30 years' time. We'll reminisce about Gibbs White and Elanga and Yates and Murillo in the way that we reminisce about Stuart Pearce and Woan and Stone, Baheen and Collymore. You know, they're just, they are people that you know. Their talent stands the test of time. We're going to be reminiscing about this season, beating Liverpool and Man United and Man City, getting to Wembley again. It's like, this is what we dreamt of. We dreamt that we would get a fraction of what we've had this season. So then it's just a fairy tale that I just don't want it to end.
I mean, even speaking as a Notts County fan myself, I think it would be amazing for the city if Forest won the FA Cup. You know, I think, you know, just something like that. And you can see, you know, the other thing is there's, you know, obviously, I think the rivalry between Notts and Forest is different. It's been quite one-sided for a while, you know. But I think the other thing that, as a Notts fan, we're seeing direct benefits from this as well. I mean, well, firstly, like, I'll tell you what, you mentioned Ryan Yates earlier. We loved him too, right?
Yeah.
When I first saw him play for Notts, when he came on loan, I was just like, how is that little kid so bone hard? And I just remember, like, him going into these crunching tackles and just coming out with the ball all the time. And just amazing. And secondly, the big thing that's happening for County is that people can't get tickets to Forest anymore. It's a complete sellout. And so a lot of people are going to County instead because, you know, football's booming. And so if you look at our attendances now, I think we are directly benefiting from this.
That's so
really
good. But also you're doing well as well, getting out of the National League. You know, you're in the middle of a promotion campaign. It's so good. It's so good. County need to be back up there. And having two teams doing well is, it's so special because we hate Derby. That'll always be our primary rivalry. And obviously you've got Chesterfield and Mansfield as well. And I know it probably drives Notts fans mad that Forest fans like you. But it's probably the worst thing because you think, man, don't say that. Oh, fucking hate me so that we can have a proper rivalry. And if we were in the same league again, I think that rivalry would then flourish. It would become... It would then become a proper rivalry again. But obviously, when you're not in the same league, if you're not playing each other, there's no point, is there? Because you want derbies where you're actually playing each other, where you're in the same stadium and you're hurling abuse. That's what you need.
The ridiculous thing is we might end up being the ones playing Derby next season. If you look at how strangely it's all got. I mean, I haven't checked the table recently, but they were near the relegation zone when I last saw it.
Yeah, they were a point off it the last time I checked. I think that was yesterday. They're so screwed. So, yeah, I would love County to go. I'd love County to be in the Premier League. I mean, to have two teams in the top flight would be marvellous.
I mean, it'd be amazing. But you know what? Like, I'd just be very happy. There's an impatience among Notts fans at the moment about promotion this season and all that. And obviously, everybody wants everything now. But, you know, like, there's a nice thing of we had the most amazing... That playoff final, right, was...
Oh, man.
I've been to watch three other playoff finals that we've been in, two of which we've won. That one in itself, because we'd had this whole campaign where we were, like, 16 points clear of everybody below us. And then we were absolute, like, dog shit in those games. And just didn't deserve to win, and won really cheekily. So that game itself was the most emotional thing. I mean, I sat there with my dad, right, who in the early 90s took me to watch Warnock in the playoff finals as a kid. And I sat there, and I'd got to the point where we'd both gone, it's okay that we're not going to win this. Okay, it's okay. We were having like a heart to heart, but because that's part of the pathos of being a County fan, I think. And you know. And, you know, to an extent, Forest have been through that recently as well. Oh, so man. It's not, I think Forest, the way I can see it in the Premier League is a lot of, you know, there's all the reports of people going, God, there's a good atmosphere there and things like that. And it's because if you're Man City, what actually is happening now? Man City of old, when they had like Paul Lake and Niall Quinn, were real hardcore fans. Whereas now they're kind of, you know, being bought out and probably watching those kind of people still exist, but they're probably at home watching it on a fire stick so that someone's business can book a load of seats.
That's right.
And that's why it's not loud. So, yeah. So, you know, more power to it. I mean, the only thing I'd say is, you know, like it's, so as a County fan, No, I'm not sure I'd ever want to see us in the Premier League, and but I do. I'm really enjoying seeing Forest there. I just hope. I don't know. I just don't know how much further you can go. God, maybe it is another case of what Gluffy did under Nuno, you know?
Yeah.
Be amazing.
Maybe it is. And if we redevelop the stadium so that you're getting more people in every week, then you've got a more, you know, that extra revenue. All that, you know, that's when you can really start to compete, hopefully. But God knows. I mean, the thing is with football, you just never know how long a bad or a good streak is going to last. I would never have believed it would take us 23 years to get back. I would just never have thought it would be that long. And then towards the end of that, you were starting to think, well, maybe we just never will. Maybe this is it now. And then all of a sudden, bang, Cooper gets us up and look what's happened. So it can always change. So you just have to relish the good seasons because God knows, it could all fall apart next year. I don't think it will. Obviously, I hope it doesn't. So you just have to enjoy the good times because as we both County and Forest know, the bad times can last fucking ages.
Yes. I saw you on telly over Christmas on Celebrity Mastermind.
You can get it.
That was great.
Oh, thank you. Oh, pressure. Mega pressure. I do you know what? Not to win it, just not to get a Forest question wrong. Because I was like, I could just see my Twitter mentions being dominated by it forever. How did you not know that was Cluffy or whatever the question was going to be? But when you're there and the spotlight's in your eyes, it's a million times harder than when you watch it at home. The pressure, it's the context of the pressure that changes it. So when you watch these shows, you go, how did they get that wrong? You're like, because their head's all over the place. It's like psychological warfare in there. In fact, they told me that Mastermind was invented by a former prisoner of war and it was to recreate an interrogation setting. I completely, and obviously the celebrity one's easier than the main show, but the pressure of that spotlight and that stage and that theme tune is, oh God, you feel like your life depends on it. So I was just pleased that I got all my Forest questions right. I just thought that's fine by me. And then I couldn't believe it when I'd won at the end. I thought I'd messed up that general knowledge round. So it was a total surprise to me that I'd won.
Amazing. And you chose the Manual House as your charity as well, didn't you?
Yes, my mum used to run the charity shop there so for years. So I've always, it's obviously always been close to my heart, and they help people in Nottingham. Obviously, they're in a dire situation, you know, and I think with charities like that, the money will just go so much further. You know, the stuff that £3,000 can do, you know, the meals it can provide, the shelter. I'm just so pleased that it's still there and it's still doing such good work for people in Nottingham. So, yes, I was delighted to be able to help them out a bit.
Yeah, amazing. So you do a lot of things. You're quite a polymath, aren't you? Comedian, presenter, writer, impressionist. What is it you enjoy best?
I enjoy them all in different ways. They're all, I think stand-up is such a pure hit of adrenaline and satisfaction because you get the immediate reaction. Whereas with radio, with podcasts, or with telly, you know that people are watching it somewhere, but you can't hear the laughter back. Whereas in the room, you get that immediate bang noise of laughter. And that is the purity of it, is you get that immediate explosion. Obviously, you also know when it hasn't worked. So, you know, it's that high wire act, particularly when you're trying newer stuff and you think, this is a funny idea, but I haven't quite nailed the wording of it or the logic of it. And I really enjoy solving that problem. And then when you've nailed it, you think, perfect. And then when you've got a show finished and you're taking it out on tour, getting to go to different places, getting to perform in Nottingham is just, it's like a dream come true, really. I started going to watch Just the Tonic Comedy Club, and I remember thinking, I'd love to have my name in the Just the Tonic flyer one day. You know, that was really the extent of my ambition, really, was to be listed on the bill at Just the Tonic. So then when you can come back and play the Lakeside or the Playhouse, you think, oh man, this is a real treat. It's cool, you know, loads of Forest fans. Wherever I perform in the country, there's always someone who shouts, you Reds, at some point. So obviously Forest fans are everywhere. But obviously when you're in Nottingham, then it's, you know, you've got a room full of it. It's great.
Mm. So when you come back to Nottingham, I mean, I presume you come back quite often as well as when you're not playing, or when you're playing, right? What are some favourite spots? Not that I want, you know, you to get mobbed when you go to a restaurant or whatever, but what are your favourite places?
Man, I just think we've got some of the best pubs in the world. So I love, I really like, I like those ones up by the castle. Castle and Fothergill's are good. The Cross Keys. Obviously, the Trip is, you've got to go to the Trip. I like the ones down by the canal. Yeah. I like Six Barrels. Where's the other place? Do you know what? I'd never been before. I went to the Kilpin the other day. Brilliant. I love German lager. And it's like they've got about 100 different German lagers. So that was great. Trying to think where else. I mean, the ones around the ground are good. You know, the Brew House and the William Gunn.
Big shed. So
those sorts of places. Just spend all day in Nottingham pubs.
What about parks? What are your favourite kind of days out in that?
Oh, Arboretum's lovely. So we'd go, as a kid, every Sunday, my mum would take us to either Woolerton Park, the Arboretum, or what was the other one? There was another big one. Arboretum's great, just to mooch about. They've still got those cages, that aviary with the birds in. Woolerton Park, obviously, is stunning, isn't it? I mean, Woolerton Park and the house, the grounds of that with the deer and everything, just unreal. Mm. Absolutely,
it is amazing when you know, if you ever take, I've taken friends from other countries like Brazil and things there, and they're like, what the fuck is this? You know, it's like the first time I saw a marabou stork or a capybara or something.
Yeah,
you know, crackers. Like, yeah,
yeah, I love one.
So it is an amazing thing, and we just kind of take it for granted, don't we, on our doorstep?
Yeah, I mean, the Nottingham campus, you're like, it's unreal, it's so weird. Most campuses aren't like that. So Highfields and all that area around there. I just like mooching about Nottingham. I love Market Square. I love Hockley. I love walking around the Vicky Centre. Pubs on Mansfield Road are great, aren't they? The Golden Fleece. And oh, I tell you where I love. The Dragon.
Yeah. Proper pub.
Yeah, and Ornate, who runs it, is a legend. Like a proper Nottingham legend.
I know Ornate right. too. Yeah.
Really funny. Great beers. Great crisps, Cobbs on the Bar, the Trent Nav, and the Dragon. Cobbs on the Bar, good beers, good laugh. Man, I knew there was two that I was missing. Two of the best.
So what do you still have left to achieve, Matt? I mean, you've done a lot of things already, but what would you like to do next?
Oh, crikey. You just always want to do more, don't you? I would like to get a kind of late night show made. I would a sitcom. There's a couple that I'm working on, hoping to get made.
Would you act in them, or are you just writing them?
Yeah, I'd like to act in them as well. Yeah, maybe a bit more acting stuff. You just want to keep going. You just got to keep the show on the road. You know, more tours, more podcasts. You know, TV, radio. Just keep making stuff. It's just that thrill of coming up with an idea and not knowing where it'll take you. You think, well, even, you know, I think about this with my experience with cancer and everything, is how many people who go through something like that will then be able to stand on stage and write jokes about it and get laughs out of it, and in a way then be able to get over it in that way. So few people. I think I'm one of the luckiest bastards alive. I'm like, I get to stand there, talk about this, mine it for laughs, and that has helped me kind of get through the worst of it. I think that's incredible. I can't believe that is my living. I pay my bills doing that. And you never know, you know, it might be an idea for a telly show or a radio show or whatever it is. And you think, my God, came up, you know, what a great privilege that is your work. Because work for most people is a way to pay the bills, is they're not defined by their job. They work because they've got rent to pay, and then, you know, their hobbies or their interests or their family define them, who they really, really are. So I think if you get to follow your passion as a job, really, you're living your best life. All of the things, you know, being cancer-free and having an amazing wife and all those things. But if you can make the work part of your life something that you really enjoy, then I think you're in a very small number of people. I think work is basically a slog. So if you can, you know, it's still hard at times. Obviously, there's other problems that come with it. But if you're basically following your passion, then I think you should count yourself to be a very lucky person.
Left Line Magazine is Nottingham's free printed culture guide. We aim to shine a light on the city and its culture, each month bringing you between 40 and 56 pages of independent local events and culture-based journalism. Every month, we distribute between 10 and 15,000 copies for free in over 300 venues across the county. For example, you can find copies in every local library, every Castle Rock pub, in all active Nottingham leisure centres, and in many other places besides. In line with our pledge to be a carbon neutral company, copies are delivered by our team on foot, by electric bike, or, if necessary, by vehicle. You can also read the full magazine online for free at leftlion.co.uk/magazine. If you'd like to promote your business or organisation with us, please visit leftlion.co.uk/advertise. And if you'd like to pitch us a story, please email editorial@leftlion.co.uk.
Matt Ford, everyone! So, if you want to catch Matt's show at the Nottingham Playhouse, titled The End of an Era Tour, it takes place on Thursday the 5th of June. Tickets are £25 each, and at the time of recording this, there's a small amount of them still available. It's also just been announced that Matt is fronting a new BBC Radio 4 series called the Matt Ford Focus Group. That airs from the 22nd of May onwards on BBC Radio 4. The printed version of this interview in the May issue of Left Lion magazine, which is out in town now by the way, ran under the headline Ford Fiesta. So I'm glad it's not just us making car puns out of his name. Thank you for listening to this podcast right to the end. I'm genuinely not sure who we have lined up next to interview on here, but if it does end up being a long gap, I really hope you have a lovely summer. Bye bye!